White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
I gotta turn my mic level up here if I'm gonna do a show. What do you think about that? Well, here we are back in the saddle again. I got a little echo on this, and I forget how to get rid of it, but hell, it may sound better. This is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. Yeah, and it's, what is it? Where's my Frank Soul Memorial clock here? Here, it's on the floor. This is the 26th of May, 2015, and it's Tears Day. We finally got past the phony ceremonies and beating the chest and sackcloth and ash, which meant about as much as bullshit, where millions of guys have died fighting for what they don't even know what they fought for. They might have fought valiantly, but it was of no avail, just rewarding the super rich, the predatory capitalists. That's all it is. So I hate those so-called holidays when they come around, because I feel really bad all day. Interesting weather around here. High winds, up and down and around. Then some rain. Then some more high winds. Then it's quiet, the sun shines. We got any kind of weather you want here in Indiana. Yeah. Well, it's time to hear some more shit about this criminal, war criminal government and their predatory capitalist friends. So I've dug into the files here, and we got something covering the book by Seymour Hersh. From what I understand, he's a tame Jew. I don't care what. He has put out a good book here about the murder of bin Laden. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, that's wonderful, that's wonderful. But I have a problem with murdering soldiers. And bin Laden, for whatever he was a soldier. And only cowards murder soldiers. They could have brought him to trial, brought all the information out, find out about the Saudi Arabians and their role in 9/11. But they didn't. And of course they didn't, because they're guilty as hell of working with the Saudis. So they shot him point blank range, unarmed, then wrapped him in a sheet, took him out to sea, and threw him overboard. You know, that stuff don't go away. It sticks around with you. You know, like in the old days when the 7th Cavalry disrespected the Indians, the Mongols, they had their code of honor too. And many times they came back to beat our white ancestors in the ass, like homesteaders and so forth that got their scalps taken and homesteads burned up, because there needs to be honor no matter what. And they don't show it. CIA, none of these people in Washington are honorable men, so how can we expect them to do honorable things? Dishonorable men do dishonorable things. So let's hear what was really going on there in the last stages of Osama bin Laden's time on the old terra firma.
So welcome back to hour two here. Mike Church on the SiriusXM Patriot Channel. We're live here at the DC Command Center in beautiful downtown. Oh, there's nothing beautiful about this town. We even missed the spring. There's no dogwoods out. No cherry trees or nothing for George Washington to chop down. Hey, that we have Carson running around getting all sorts of people situated to come on the program and to get in through security here. There was a concern that was raised. Well, who's going to answer the phone while Carson's running around? And I said, it's Tuesday. It's the Mike Church Show. Who in the hell calls this show on a Tuesday? The capture of bin Laden. Because I have a couple of other areas highlighted of what I have read thus far before we move on to anything else. And we had left off where the Pakistanis had told the Americans, that's us, they had bin Laden, and that they had bin Laden since 2006. Now, Paul and I were talking about this during the timeout. So all the while, so for 4 years, while we were funding bulletproof limousines for Pakistani intelligence officials, there was Osama bin Laden sitting there in the possession of the ISI. That's the Pakistani intelligence service. Just to be clear here, the Pakistanis had him, and not only that, the Saudis knew that the Pakistanis had him. So for all of you that are such big boosters of our wonderful allies in the region, and for the mythology that it was discovered in 2010 that the world knew where bin Laden was, well, the Pakistani military knew where bin Laden was from early 2002 is what Hirsch has revealed here, before he was moved to Abbottabad. And the Saudi Arabians were paying for his upkeep. Just keep that in mind. Back to Seymour Hirsch now. The U.S. had begun to cut back on aid to Pakistan. Just turn off the spigot, in the retired official's words. The provision of, now listen to this. The provision of 18 new F-16 fighter aircraft was delayed. Do you understand this? So in other words, you and me were going to work back in 2009 and 2010 so that we could pay taxes, so that John McCain and company could buy fighter jets and give them to the Pakistanis while they held bin Laden. And we didn't know about it. Understand the deceit that's going on here. The provision of 18 new F-16 fighter aircraft was delayed, and under the table cash payments to the senior leaders were suspended. In April of 2011, Pasha met the CIA director, Leon Panetta, at agency headquarters. Pasha got a commitment that the United States would turn the money back on, and that we got a guarantee that there would be no Pakistani opposition during the mission, the retired official said. Pasha also insisted that Washington stop complaining about Pakistan's lack of cooperation with the American war on terrorism. At one point this spring, Pasha offered the Americans a blunt explanation of the reason Pakistan kept bin Laden's capture a secret and why it was imperative for the ISI role to remain secret. Quote, we needed a hostage to keep tabs on Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, Pasha said, according to the retired U.S. official that Hirsch had contacted or had been interviewed for this story. Quote, the ISI was using bin Laden as leverage against Taliban and Al-Qaeda activities inside Afghanistan and Pakistan. They let the Taliban and Al-Qaeda leadership know that if they ran operations that clashed with the interests of the ISI, they would turn bin Laden over to us. So if it became known that the Pakistanis had worked with us to get bin Laden at Abbottabad, there would be hell to pay. In one of his meetings with Panetta, according to the retired official and a source within the CIA, Pasha was asked by a senior CIA official whether he saw himself as acting in essence as an agent for Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. He answered no, but said the ISI needed to have some control. The message, as the CIA saw it, according to the retired official, was that Kayani and Pasha viewed bin Laden as a resource, and they were more interested in their own survival than they were in the United States. A Pakistani with close ties to the senior leadership of the ISI told me, that Seymour Hersh, that their, quote, was a deal with your top guys. We were very reluctant, but it had to be done. Not because of personal enrichment, but because all of the American aid programs would be cut off. Your guy said, we will starve you out if you don't do it. And the okay was given while Peshawar was in Washington. The deal was not only kept, to keep the taps open, but Peshawar was told that there would be more goodies for us. The Pakistani said that Peshawar's visit also resulted in a commitment from the U.S. to give Pakistan a freer hand in Afghanistan as it began its military drawdown there. And so our top dogs justified the deal by saying that this is for our country. It was clear by to all by this point, the retired official said, that bin Laden would not survive. Peshawar told us at a meeting in April that he could not risk leaving bin Laden in the compound now that we know he's there. Too many people in the Pakistani chain of command know about the mission. He and Kiani had to tell the whole story to the directors of the Air Defense Command and to a few local commanders. So again, this whole ridiculous story that the White House has sown and that Mrs. Clinton and Obama and everyone else has been promoting, that SEAL Team 6 just flew in, quote, under the radar, close quote, or that we use jamming technology, it's all BS. None of it ever happened. Well, it makes a great movie, though, doesn't it? Of course, the guys knew the target was bin Laden and he was under Pakistani control, the retired official said. Otherwise, they would not have done the mission without air cover. It was clearly and absolutely a premeditated murder. A former SEAL commander who has led and participated in dozens of similar missions over the past decade assured me that, quote, we were not going to keep bin Laden alive to allow the terrorists to live. By law, we know what we were doing inside Pakistan is a homicide. We've come to grips with that. Each one of us, when we do these missions, we say to ourselves, let's face it, we're going to commit a murder. Close quote. The White House's initial account claimed that bin Laden had been brandishing a weapon. The story was aimed at deflecting those who questioned the legality of the U.S. administration's targeted assassination program. There it is again. So this is a bigger kill list, in other words. The U.S. has consistently maintained, despite widely reported remarks by people involved with the mission, that bin Laden would have been taken alive if he had immediately surrendered. At the Abbottabad compound, ISI guards were posted around the clock to keep watch over bin Laden and his wives and children. They were under orders to leave as soon as they heard the rotors of the U.S. helicopters. The town was dark. The electricity supply had been cut off on the orders of the ISI hours before the raid began. One of the Black Hawks crashed inside the walls of the compound, injuring many on board. The guys knew the TOT, time on target, had to be tight, because they would wake up the whole town going in, the retired official said. Cockpit of the crashed Black Hawk with its communication and navigational gear had to be destroyed by concussion grenades, and this would create a series of explosions and a fire visible for miles. Two Chinook helicopters had flown from Afghanistan to a nearby Pakistani intelligence base to provide logistical support, and one of them was immediately dispatched to Abbottabad. But because the helicopter had been equipped with a bladder loaded with extra fuel for the two Blackhawks, it first had to be reconfigured as a troop carrier. The crash of the Blackhawk and the need to fly in a replacement were nerve-wracking and time-consuming setbacks, but the SEALs continued with their mission. There was no firefight as they moved into the compound. The ISI guards had gone. Everyone in Pakistan has a gun and high profile. Wealthy folks like those who live in Abbottabad have armed bodyguards. And yet there were no weapons in the compound, the retired official pointed out. Had there been any opposition, the team would have been highly vulnerable. Instead, the retired official said, an ISI liaison officer flying with the SEALs guided them into the darkened house and up a staircase to bin Laden's quarters. The SEALs had been warned by the Pakistanis that heavy steel doors blocked the stairwell on the first and second floor landings. Bin Laden's rooms were on the third floor. The SEAL squad used explosives to blow the doors open without injuring anyone. One of the bin Laden's wives was screaming hysterically, and a bullet, perhaps a stray round, struck her knee. Aside from those that hit bin Laden, no other shots were fired. And Hirsch says in parentheses here, parenthetical, that the Obama administration's account would hold otherwise. They knew where the target was. Third floor, second door on the right, the retired official said. Go straight there. Osama was cowering and retreated into the bedroom. Two shooters followed him and opened up. Very simple, very straightforward, very professional hit. Some of the SEALs were appalled later at the White House's initial insistence that they had shot bin Laden in self-defense, the retired official said. Six of the SEALs' finest, most experienced NCOs, as non-commissioned officers, faced with an unarmed elderly civilian, had to kill him in self-defense. The house was shabby, and bin Laden was living in a cell with bars on the window and barbed wire on the roof. The rules of engagement were that if bin Laden put up any opposition, they were authorized to take lethal action. But if they suspected he might have some means of opposition, like an explosive vest under his robe, they could also kill him. So here's this guy in a mystery robe, and they shot him. It's not because he was reaching for a weapon. The rules gave them absolute authority to kill the guy. The later White House claimed that only one or two bullets were fired into his head. And I'm going to say this in the context in which Hirsch has published it, my friends. If you have children in the car, you don't want them to hear this word. Hold their ears for a moment. The later White House claimed that only one or two bullets were fired into his head was bullshit, the retired official said. Squad came through the door and obliterated him. As the SEALs say, quote, we kicked his ass and took his gas, close quote. After they killed bin Laden, the SEALs were just there, some with physical injuries from the crash, waiting for the relief chopper, the retired official said. 20 tense minutes. The Black Hawk is still burning. There are no city lights, no electricity, no cops, no fire trucks. They have no prisoners. Bin Laden's wives and children were left for the ISI to interrogate and relocate. Despite all the talk, the retired official said, there were no garbage bags full of computers and storage devices. The guys just stuffed some books and papers they found in his room in their backpacks. The SEALs weren't there because they thought bin Laden was running a command center for al-Qaeda operations, as the White House would later tell the media. And they were not intelligence experts gathering information from inside the house. So basically, folks, the story that was told is a fairy tale, fabricated. Now, that doesn't matter because bin Laden's dead. So most people will just take that on the surface. But the steamy details of how bin Laden was alive in the first place and who it was that was keeping him alive and was funneling money for his upkeep and his care, that's the story. Why this isn't... Paulie, isn't this more interesting than the movie that they made about it anyways? I think Hirsch has written a great screenplay here. This is good stuff. So if you missed the first hour, let me recap. The Saudi Arabians and the Pakistanis conspired for 5 years before bin Laden was killed to keep him alive. The Saudis, because they knew if we ever captured bin Laden, and if anyone in media or government was ever allowed to actually interrogate him, and if he caught any info up, it would show the sick, perverted connection between al-Qaeda, bin Laden, and the Saudi Arabian government, the Saudi Arabian royal family. Don't forget, tens of billions of dollars flow to Saudi Arabia, including military support, including military hardware, and right now we are actually helping the Saudi Arabians kill innocent civilians in Yemen. Now, these are the madmen that continue to fund al-Qaeda, that continue to support terrorist organizations all around, quote, the region, as we're told. And people don't have a problem with this. This is what is really just galling. Where's the outrage over this? You know that the Saudis are in cahoots with the, quote, enemy, close quote. Why do you support the Saudis? Aren't they then the enemy? What did Bush say in quoting the Bible? If you're not with us, you're against us. Well, it seems to me like the Saudis are against us. And there's just pages and pages and pages of the after story and the cover up that went to work here. Now, I didn't word search the document to see if the term Hillary comes up, or the proper noun Hillary, which I'd be Well, I would be very interested to hear. Here, I'm going to pick this up at the end of the near the end of the story here because it gets interesting again. So the Seymour Hersh, the journalist, has been in contact with a senior bomb administration or lifelong government official that worked for the CIA or one of the intelligence agencies. He also personally interviewed the two Pakistanis who were instrumental in seeing to it that the air defenses were taken down and could tell him and confirm to him, to Hersh, that the version of events that they were about to tell, that there was evidence in the historical record, documentary evidence, and that this is the way that it happened. So let's go back to the story now. But the retired official told me, and this is now I'm about 10 pages forward now, but the retired official told me that in their initial debriefings, the SEALs made no mention of a firefight or indeed of any opposition. Now, how many of you can remember, if you're watching this on the Clinton News Network, do you remember the reanimation, the reenactment of the SEALs going in and the bogey guards that were all there with laser-sighted rifles that they had to take them out? Remember this? They had to recreate this whole thing, this whole dramatization of it. And they went step by step with the recreation of it using 3D animation software. Well, where did they get the story from? Well, they got it from Obama. The trauma and danger portrayed by Bissonnette and O'Neill met a deep-seated need, the retired official said. Quote, SEALs cannot live with the fact that they killed bin Laden totally unopposed. And so there has to be an account of their courage in the face of danger. Guys are going to sit around the bar and say it was an easy day? That's not going to happen. Close quote. There was another reason to claim that there had been a firefight inside the compound. A retired official said, to avoid the inevitable question that would arise from an uncontested assault. Where were bin Laden's guards? Surely the most sought-after terrorist on the planet would have round-the-clock protection. And one of those killed had to be the courier because he didn't exist and we couldn't produce him. The Pakistanis had no choice but to play along with the story. 2 days after the raid, Reuters published photographs of three dead men that it said had purchased from an ISI official. Two of the men were later identified by an ISI spokesman as being the alleged courier and his brother. There's only one problem with this. There was no courier, so he couldn't have had a brother. 5 days after the raid, the Pentagon press corps was provided with a series of videotapes that were sent by U.S. officials that had been taken from a large collection the SEALs had removed from the compound, along with as many as 15 computers. Snippets from one of the videos showed a solitary bin Laden looking wan and wrapped in a blanket, watching what appeared to be a video of himself on television. An unnamed official told reporters that the raid produced a treasure trove, the single largest collection of senior terrorist materials ever, which would provide vital insights into Al-Qaeda's plans. All you had to do was call up your buddies in the Saudi Arabian government, and they tell you what Al-Qaeda's plans are because they're their plans. The official said the material showed that bin Laden remained an active leader in Al-Qaeda, providing strategic and operational and tactical instructions to the group. He was far from a figurehead and continued to direct even tactical details of the group's management and to encourage plotting from what was described as a command and control center in Abbottabad. He was an active player, making the recent operation even more essential for our nation's security, the official said. The information was so vital, he added, that the administration was setting up an interagency task force to process it. He was not simply someone who was penning Al-Qaeda strategy. He was throwing operational ideas out there, and he was specifically directing other Al-Qaeda members. These claims, and Seymour Hersh now, these claims were fabrications. There wasn't much activity for bin Laden to exercise command and control over. The retired intelligence official said that the CIA's internal reporting showed that since bin Laden moved to Abbottabad in 2006, only a handful of terrorist attacks could be linked to the remnants of bin Laden's Al-Qaeda. We were told at first, a retired official said, that the SEALs produced garbage bags of stuff and that the community is generating daily intelligence reports out of this stuff. And then we were told that the community is gathering everything together and needs to translate it. But nothing has come of it. Every single thing they've created turns out not to be true. It's a great hoax, like the Piltdown Man. The retired official said that most of the materials from Abbottabad were turned over by the U.S. to the turned over to the U.S. by the Pakistanis, who later destroyed the building. The ISI took responsibility for the wives and children of bin Laden, none of whom were made available to the U.S. for questioning. The retired official said, quote, "Why create the treasure trove story? The White House had to give the impression that bin Laden was still operationally important. Otherwise, why kill him?" A cover story was created, and there was a network of couriers coming and going with memory sticks and instructions, all to show that bin Laden remained important. And there's just more. There's page after page after page of the remaining of the cover story that had to be fabricated to flesh out the phony details of bin Laden's demise. Hirsch concludes, there's a report that was made on this. The main theme of the committee's 499-page executive summary is that the CIA lied systematically about the effectiveness of its torture program in gaining intelligence that would stop future terrorist attacks in the United States. The lies included some vital details about the uncovering of an al-Qaeda operative called Abu Ahmed al-Kuwaiti, who is said to be the key al-Qaeda courier, and the subsequent tracking of him to Abbottabad in early 2011. This is the guy that Claire Danes allegedly discovered in the movie, whatever that film. What was the name of that movie? Do you remember?
It was Zero Dark Thirty, right?
Zero Dark Thirty, right. Whole thing was made up. None of that happened. Shocker, right? The agency alleged the agency's alleged intelligence, patience, and skill in finding al-Kuwaiti became legend after, after it was traumatized in Zero Dark Thirty. But I just read another sentence. The Senate report repeatedly asked questions about the quality and reliability of the CIA's intelligence about al-Kuwaiti. In 2005, an internal CIA report on the hunt for bin Laden noted that detainees provided few actionable leads, and we have to consider the possibility that they are creating fictitious characters to distract us or to absolve themselves of direct knowledge about bin Laden. The CIA cable a year later stated that we have no success in eliciting actionable intelligence on bin Laden's location from any detainees. The report also highlighted several instances of CIA officers, including Panetta, making false statements to Congress and the public about the value of, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques, close quote. In other words, those infamous tortures that so many of you are so fond of recalling and recanting to me how wonderful they are and how great they are. Obama today is not facing re-election as he was in the spring of 2011. His principled stand on behalf of the proposed nuclear agreement with Iran says much, as does his decision to operate without the support of the conservative Republicans in Congress. High-level lying, nevertheless, remains the modus operandi of U.S. policy, along with secret prisons, drone attacks, special forces night raids, bypassing the chain of command, and cutting out those who might say no.
Well, boys and girls, guess what? You know what the Supreme Court has decided? And I don't know how long ago this was. Maybe recently. But if you're a Jew, a Hebrew, in the United States, on your birth certificate, you can choose your birthplace as Israel or the United States, no matter which place you were born. Does that give you a little clue who's running the show here, man? They're just, that's okay. That's all right. That's okay. Sure. Anybody else able to do that? Anybody else able to do that? I don't know. I don't think so. I thought we had separation of church and state. Hell no, we've never had separation of church and state. And when they say that, the churches can't be involved in politics and anything like that, are you kidding? I'll tell you one thing. Around here where I live, the Republicans meet all the time in the Christian churches and politic and support people for office, which is illegal, but they do it. And the Democrats around the big cities and way down south in the country, the blacks do it. And or the whatever you want to call the liberals, progressives or what, that they can they meet in the churches. Guess what? You know, the civil wrongs movement was operated and engineered right out of the churches. Yeah, well, I guess we don't have a mind control center here that I can get into. I don't know. I'll have to look around. I don't think there's any Church of the Creator churches around here. Yeah. You know what really barfs my soul is that when all these people come into the United States from these foreign countries, millions of them, and don't just say Mexico, they're from everywhere. Now they get here and they give them their citizenship like they hand out candy. And then they go back out in the world and go back to their countries and run around and do all kinds of stuff, businesses and religion and everything else. And then if something happens to them, we're supposed to come and take care of it. We're supposed to, spend our tax money and our blood pulling their ass out of the fire. You see these, and all these Christians that get arrested in other countries, you know, many times on espionage, and probably in most cases it's true, espionage for the predatory capitalists, and they do that. And then it comes on the news, you know, you think it was your neighbor George Brown or Johnny Smith with blue eyes and blonde hair that was being held overseas. Oh, it's horrible. An American citizen. American citizen is held. Oh, we got to get the Army and the Navy. Everybody, let's go get them. Bullshit. You see, that's the problem. These people mix all of their politics and religion with into the culture of our culture. I guess we've got a culture. Do we have a culture? Well, I don't know. I begin to think we don't have a culture anymore. I've got a culture, and I keep it close. But the majority of white people don't have a culture. Their culture is Fox TV, or maybe MSNBC, or the Right Reverend Al Sharpton. That's their culture. You know, I used to divide my enemies or opposition up in sections, different groups. You know, right wing, left wing, progressive, liberal, Christian, conservative, and all these different areas, all my enemies. Well, yeah, they are my enemies because they consider me an enemy. I guess I got to defend myself. So my position from now on is this, it's just the enemy. They're all in under one banner. So I'm going to just call them the enemy. I'm not going to call them the Jews or the Christian Zionists or the Republicans or the Democrats or any of that kind of stuff, even predatory capitalists. I will now, from now on, hopefully I'll remember this, refer to them strictly as the enemy. What do you think? That takes care of the whole thing. I want to refer you to a .com that I think is very important. And one of the great writers on there is Perry. Yeah. Robert Perry. And it's consortiumnews.com. consortiumnews.com. He does some of the best investigative reporting I've seen around, and boy, I'll tell you, the enemy hate him. The enemy hate his guts. So read some of his articles. Oh yeah, you're not going to agree with all of them, of course. But we have to get our news where we can get it. We got to get our truth where we can get it. Many times that's somebody that we may disagree with 50% of the time, but 50% of the time he's on the ball or she's on the ball. That's the only way you do things. The enemy, like I said, everybody I consider, all these other elements, whether it's right, left, Republican, Democrat, and all that kind of stuff, or Christian Zionists, I simply refer to them as the enemy, so you'll get used to that as time goes on. Did you ever ask yourself, what the hell's going on down with these planes down in the Malaysia area in the South Pacific? Where in the hell are these planes going? What's happening? 60 Minutes even had a totally screwed up report on it. Well, Robert Perry has done an article on that consortium news. And it's pretty interesting what's going on and how they're covering up or whatever they're doing on these planes that are disappearing out of the air. I think the flying saucers are getting them. Just remember, there was some very, very important people on those planes. And if it's important enough, if they're important enough and a thorn in your side to the predatory capitalists, they can get rid of a plane with 200 people on just as easy as a plane with one person on it. I see they have a story out now that Robert Kennedy Jr. was murdered. Well, of course he was murdered. be 99% positive that he was murdered. That's what happens in all these deals. You keep digging, and you'll find out who in the hell, why did they want to kill him and what for. I believe that was Robert Kennedy Jr. There's a lot of Kennedys running around. I can't keep them straight. Well, Southerners tend to, a lot of them, still want to refight the Civil War at the drop of a hat, even though that the revisionist history is available, that it was a useless war, a needless war, and one that should have never happened. And, unfortunately, even though I have a lot of respect for the South really screwed it up. That's what we've been reading out of this book about the agricultural system based upon slavery. Never should have been. It was bound to fail sooner or later. And the more it tried to spread itself around, the more it failed. But trouble is, the people who have relatives who were in the Civil War, just like people today who have relatives in the Second World War and so forth, they're very touchy about this stuff. Even when they're wrong, they're touchy. Now, the basis is certainly that the South, with the institution of slavery, was a forerunner to modern predatory capitalism. And much of that slavery money is still involved in the great inheritances of people and great corporations in the North. Because remember, the North was just involved, just as much involved, only they just didn't have the physical, didn't have them physically in their backyard. it's sort of like stock market, where you can control a piece of stock, but you don't have to own it, or it doesn't have to be in your account. Well, sure, millions of Northerners, probably millions, were definitely involved in the slave trade, not only from the eastern shores where they built ships, and also the rum business that they were involved in. But anyway, that's the North was up to its ears in slavery. In fact, the state of New York actually wanted to secede at one time itself before the Civil War even started, before the southern 15 states thought about seceding. Anyhow, I'm going to read you this little article here, and I don't care who gets all excited. Who of the enemy, because I tend to draw fire. Intent on his task, this was written by Tracy Rose, a blonde-headed child with pink chubby cheeks plants a miniature Confederate battle flag on a gravesite in a little church cemetery. The placid image dominates the cover of the booklet on Confederate issues published by the North Carolina Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Within the SCV's ranks, however, a battle is now raging on whether the group should stick to maintaining gravestones, erecting monuments, and studying Civil War history or fight for the right to display Confederate symbols everywhere from schools to state houses. Things get distorted, though. They sure get distorted. The bitter conflict has divided the organization's more than 31,000 members, all of them descendants of the Confederate soldiers. Some disaffected members even formed a splinter group called Save the Sons of the Confederate Veterans last fall to defeat what they called the radical agenda of the current national leadership. They're liable to start calling them scallywags. Yeah, you never know what. Well, anyhow, this is the way it goes, and unfortunately, instead of studying the causes and issues for all these wars, including the Civil War, and finally getting that history straightening out so young people understand that it was a fruitless war on both sides and simply meant the destruction and the murder of hundreds of thousands of white people. And yet, and also, even worse, the civilians who had nothing to gain at all. And if you'll watch that movie, I think it's called Cold Mountain. I hope that's not the homosexual one. I think it's Cold Mountain. But anyhow, that's excellent. And I'll play for you what I think is important.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
I hope you heard that. It showed that it was modulating on my meter here, so I assume it went into the show. Well, invariably, I'll get an email from somebody, especially somebody that's not even one of our piffles, and they'll be calling me a dirty, rotten son of a bitch for giving my opinion on the history of the Civil War in the South. These people are usually the kind that will not educate themselves or look into anything new as far as history goes or anything like that. Even after we've got all the evidence of the phoniness and how all these wars are in the yard of the proto-capitalists or whatever here. But if you take your mind off of it and don't stick to follow the money, you've got to always follow the money, follow the greed. That's the only way you're ever going to get to the bottom of anything. And that's where it's all at. War is Jew harvest. Well, war is more than Jew harvest. War is psychopathic harvest, killer harvest, warmonger harvest. It's all of those things. But yet, people will continue to fight over whether you should fly the Confederate flag or whether you should have General Forrest statue someplace or like that. And that would be all well and good if you, first of all, uncover the sins of the war itself and the connection. Because if you don't do that, then you're going to end up in like a guy in a bar fighting with a broken beer bottle over the North-South situation, which is totally ridiculous because when you're dead, you're dead. And if you fight for a lost cause, as long as you fight valiantly, but you're better off not to fight at all because you need to find out why they want you to fight. And it's not for what they say it is. It's not for what they say it is. They always lie to you. They lie to you. They're always going to lie to you. A perfect example of one of the biggest liars, of course, he's just one of thousands and thousands, is John McCain. That son of a bitch should be in federal prison for the Iran-Contra thing he was in on with Ollie North and Reagan and all those people. Totally, totally criminal activity. Smuggling drugs by the big C-47s or whatever. I think they were using C-47s even into the United States, and then being smart and keep diverting the attention from the white people, they dumped them into the black community, which you may say, oh, well, we don't care what happens to the black. Well, I don't come from that deal. It's wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. You got to treat people right no matter what. You know? That's the way I see it. You got to be honorable. If you can't be honorable, don't be involved. There's not many honorable people around anymore. You know, very few honorable people. That's why a real, true honorable person stands out in the crowd. Well, the article goes on to say, and smack dab in the center of the controversy stands Kirk D. Lyons, a Black Mountain, North Carolina lawyer who gained prominence years ago for defending members of the Ku Klux Klan and other white supremacist groups who never call themselves white supremacists, or at least almost never. That background attracted national media coverage of the Heritage Group internal strife. Warring philosophies aside, there's also been speculation that the SCV's considerable assets, estimated at $600,000 in annual membership dues, may be helping fuel the struggle. Boy, on the good day, even on a great day, I had about a few thousand, not even that much. Salvos will doubtless continue to fly this summer when hundreds of SCV members descend on Asheville for the National Group's annual union convention hosted this year by the city's SCV camp or chapter. Okay. To outsiders, it might seem like a tempest in a teapot, but at least one interested bystander believes the outcome of the struggle will have larger implications for the region and beyond. Quote, I think who wins will be a straw in the wind about how the White South is interpreting its past and setting its agenda for the future, unquote, observes UNC Professor Harry Watson, the director of the Chapel Hill-based Center for the Study of the American South. Yeah, let's see here. I got to find my pause. Where is my pause? Oh, there's my pause. Yeah, I knew Lyons very well. In fact, we cooperated quite a bit in the beginning. I guess it's because I'm not a Christian identity person or a Christ insanity person anymore that he hasn't made contact with me in years. It's amazing how these people who are all for the white race get hung up on religion just like other people, like the Islamic people. Things heated up a little more than a year ago after Lyons announced his candidacy for a key post in the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Commander of the Army of the Northern Virginia, the SCV's organizational structure is patterned after the Confederate military. Now, with all the problems we got as a race, what the hell do we have time for arguing over this from the Confederacy? Why are we wasting our time? Lyons serves as a chief trial counsel for the Southern Legal Resource Center, a nonprofit law firm that he describes as the ACLU for Confederate Heritage, for its advocacy of Confederate flag issues. Lyons, a longtime SCV member, likewise emphasized heritage defense in his campaign for SCV. This is just another item to split up white people. And we got plenty enough now to split up white separatists. Besides getting back into this. Of course, some of it's money, some of it's reputation. I know Lyons seemed to be legitimate about it, but he went on like a Southern slave owner, you know, about this stuff. He's got to understand. Well, no, he doesn't have to understand. He's not going to change. So, quote, we need to be the preeminent defender of Southern heritage, Lyons told Express. Well, what do you mean? Slavery? Capitalism in its raw form? Something that destroyed the South? slavery did destroy the South, you know. And all that slavery stuff. It's ridiculous. I don't ever hear these guys say anything about returning these blacks to the motherland and having supported the idea after the Civil War, now that they were free, returning them to Africa. Do you ever hear them talking about that? I don't. Well, that means they think they felt that they're going to stay anyhow. And, of course, that is the crime, the sin on the race issue. That they're here, that they're copulating, that they're having kids, that they're growing in numbers. And you can't solve the problem the way these guys want to solve it. By segregation. Segregation didn't work. It won't work. It never will work. You have to have complete separation. And with separation, you can dialogue with these people. You know, it's not easy, but I can dialogue with black people. Some respect me, some don't. Quote, that is our charge under the charge of Stephen Dill Lee. See Vindication of the Cause. I don't know what that is. And I wanted everyone in my administration to live that charge every day. Read that charge when you get up in the morning and go to bed remembering that charge. That charge is what we're about, and that's why we're pushing. Now remember, when you keep pushing Sons of the Confederacy and all that, and all the poor soldiers, working class soldiers that died to make certain people rich in the South, they're killing white people from the North. In the same way with the Northern whites killing people from the South. Does it remind you of anything? Almost every war we've been in, World War I by the millions, World War II by the millions, including the civilians. What's that got to do with saving the white race? To me, it seems like it's more destroying the white race than anything else. Others, however, want the group to keep a more historical focus. I might say hysterical focus. Save the Sons of the Confederate Veterans, co-organized by Walter C. Hilderman III. That reminds me of the guy in, what was that movie? Gone with the Wind? That colonel? The guy that was sweet on, what's her name? Yeah, these proud southern gentlemen on their horse up there going to fight to the death. And they did fight to the death, defending slavery, which was killing the South. Commander of the SCV's Sergeant Arion L. DeArmond, Camp Number 1981 in Matthews, North Carolina, insists that the Sons of Confederate Veterans is the only organization with the resources and credibility to defend the true story of the Confederate soldier within the context of his time. Well, I can defend it very well. They were suppressed people, white working class in the South, poorly educated, poorly paid, poorly housed, purely bad medical treatment, all of that stuff kept on a par with the Negro. In fact, the Negro in slavery physically was in better shape. He went out there to fight for his territory. That's the one thing that is admirable about the soldiers. They fought for their territory. Once the North was invading, but it was spurred on by the South declaring war and firing on Sumter. So the Union is invading the South, and these people turn out to defend their territory. That's exactly what people should do. But it shouldn't have happened in the first place. That makes Confederate heritage a political pawn against us, the 21st century political enemies, unquote. Well, you sure know how to do that. All these people, all the enemies, you know, I said that includes a whole bunch of people. They love to fight and fight and fight and go round and round and round and split off and divide and all that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, the white race dwindles away. But this is more than just a policy dispute. Lyon's background became a key issue in the campaign, which garnered national media attention. Before Lyons began pushing Confederate flag issues in court, he had already made a name as a defender of the radical right. Well, I wasn't a radical right when he helped defend me. And though Lyons insisted he's not a white supremacist, well, I don't see how he can insist on that because, anyhow, white separatist or anti-Semite, so he says he's none of these things. Well, then he's a hypocrite phony. I'm glad he doesn't want to have anything to do with me. He has racked up a long list of professional and personal connections with clearly racist overtones. Oh, my God. Including getting married to the in the Aryan Nation's church. Would you rather have him get married in a nigger church? His friendship with former Texas KKK leader Louis Beam and his legal representation of Klan members and extremists, Tom Metzger, director of the White Aryan Resistance, color him evil. Lyon's connection were documented in a 2000 intelligence report by, hey, guess who? Southern Poverty Law Center, a Montgomery, Alabama-based nonprofit. Are you kidding? They got millions in the bank. Organization that monitors and sues extremist groups. Well, that's what helped us create Lone Wolf, because you're not going to be able to sue many extremist groups. The extremist groups are fading away. Quote, today, Lyons angrily protests whenever he's portrayed as a racist. You know, this makes him worse than the other side. At least the other side is being right out in the open. Here is a white racist. Well, I guess maybe he wasn't. Maybe he never was. A phony. A phony fucking Southerner. Bullshitting his way through. Greensboro restaurant manager Gilbert Jones and commander of the SCVs, Colonel John Sloan, Camp Number 1290, calls the Southern Poverty Law Center a pretty credible source. So the sons of the Confederacy are relying on Morris Deeds for the straight scoop. Well, at least Morris is telling the truth. These guys are all racist, or at least if they're not racist, then they're phony, cowardly sons of bitches. Jones, I have never declared I am not a racist. I have always admitted it. On every stage I've ever appeared, of course I'm a white separatist. And I think I've received a lot of respect from the enemy, some of the enemy, for it. Because I don't pull any punches, and that's probably the reason you don't see me on national TV anymore. Jones became a vocal Lyons critic after becoming concerned about where the SCV was heading. The outspoken Jones recalls making a speech at 2001 SCV convention in Lafayette, Louisiana, and drove home the following point. Quote, I thought it was time to take the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and Aryan Nation boys and show their butts to the door, unquote. Well, you wouldn't have to show my butt to the door. I wouldn't be a part of your filthy fucking organization, you moron. I hate these phony guys. If you met him on the street, he'd run the other way if you took a swing at him. They're big shots when they're protected. And a little more than a year ago, the New York Times reported on Lyons' background in connection with his race against Raleigh resident Charles Hawks for the National SCV Post. Now, you realize why the Times prints articles like that. It's just to divide white people up. They don't give a shit about the Southern Confederate soldiers. They don't care. They don't care at all. They use these devices like the Jews do to just split white people up. Speaking about Lyons, Hawks told the Times, quote, I'm afraid that if he's elected, we'll be considered racist because we elected him, unquote. Man, these guys are unbelievable. They're absolutely unbelievable, and most of them are in the right wing, and I just don't want to have any fucking thing to do with the right wing. Cowards. money boys. Lyons, meanwhile, countered that those on the other side were bedwetters who were afraid of their shadows. That's funny. Anybody in the Southern Heritage is going to have to face that they're going to be called a racist, he proclaimed. Of course. Do you think slavery was not racist? If you support the South and slavery, I don't care what you're saying to TV now. It was racist. Of course it's racist. It's worse than racist. It's capitalist racist. There's a difference between capitalist racism and racial separatism. We don't want to have slaves. We don't want to do all this stuff. We just want them someplace else. But predatory capitalism, their form of racism is to use them, abuse them, make money off of them, and then throw them aside. So every black person should hate these people. I don't disagree at all. They're hateful people. Standing proud that, their black granddaddy was a slave, didn't ask to come over here at all. And I'm telling you, the hypocrisy is a national sport in this country. It's the goddamnedest biggest sport there is. Quote, I'm proud of the people that supported me, and I think we made our point, asserts Lyons. Lyons, you're a tempest in a teapot. Nothing's going on there. It's just another way to diddle away your time and get away from your wife and go to the convention. War to the knife. In November, SCV Commander-in-Chief Ron Wilson stripped Hawks of his post for leaking information about a September executive session called considered disciplinary action against Gilbert Jones. We're going to get his ass. He isn't toeing the mark. According to the Greensboro News and Record, Hawks, who denies the charge, told the newspaper he's being purged from the organization because he doesn't embrace the far-right politics of some of its leadership. He's appealing the suspension. Meanwhile, around the time that Hawks was suspended, Jones and other dissatisfied members announced the formation of the Save the Sons of the Confederate Veterans. Described by Jones as a group of guys that say the SCV needs to remain a historical and heritage organization, supporting slavery to our dying breath. It was a noble enterprise. It was wonderful and allowed a few people in the South to live like potentates of Europe of ages old. Our place is not in right-wing fringe politics. We can't honor our ancestors if we get caught up in 21st century politics. We've got to stick to the old thing, you know. Slavery was okay. Hildeman maintains that the group is simply trying to return the SCV to its constitutional purpose. Well, that Constitution is dead and a doornail, has been dead for a long time. Return it? Well, return it to it's a white nation. It's a white man's document. Return it to that. You want to? No, we wouldn't do that. I want to get along with my fellow black baseball players and stuff. If someone wants to attack the government and advocate secession, they can join the League of the South, he proclaims in a news release. Well, there's another bunch of them. If they find some sort of warped virtue in racism. Oh, jeez. So you've got guys in this Sons of the Confederacy denying that there's anything racist about them, which makes them a laughing stock, which nobody believes. But this organization, he says, has rejected racism in its past, and it's time to do it again. Also, you're a race mixer. If you reject, racism, then you have to believe in race mixing, integration. Oh, even the guys who ran the plantations would have a little problem with that. In fact, notes the press release, Wilson has appointed members of hate groups to the SCV's National Governing Board. hate groups, that's a creation of the Southern Millionaires Law Center, and these guys are so stupid they're going right along with it. Their enemies are laughing. Wilson, however, told the News and Record that the SCV has no political litmus test, adding, quote, they're implying that the SCV has been taken over by a bunch of racists, or whatever, which is not true. Well, it should be taken over by the racists. This is all a silly thing about people trying to get their way. If they don't get their way, they go about labeling someone with odorous terms. Wilson's link to Lyons has also been duly noted, though not apparently at the time of the election. The Easley, South Carolina resident had served as a co-director of the Southern Legal Resource Center before resigning to run for the SCV's top post, notes Lyons. Wilson's SLRC seat is now filled by H.K. Edgerton, the former head of the Asheville NAACP chapter. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. The Easley, South Carolina resident had served as co-director of the Southern Legal Resource Center before resigning to run for the SCV's top post, notes Lyons. Wilson's SLRC seat is now filled by H.K. Edgerton, the former head of the Asheville NAACP chapter, who is best known in recent years for his walkouts wearing Confederate gray, carrying a Confederate flag, and toting a Heritage Not Hate sign. Jesus Christ. The battle has now entered the cyberspace as well. Not long after the Save the SCV launched its website, we support our SCV leadership. On the latter site, a petition of indictment of Hawks, Jones, and other claims the men violated the SCV policy on media relations, among other accusations, and called Save the SCV a rump group. Now you see why white people can't get along? I mean, they're just a bunch of... A posting by the SCV chief of staff, Ron Castile, further fanned the flames, declaring Wilson has overwhelmed support to rid the organization of this gaggle of liberal loons now working to infect SCV with the poisonous gas of political correctness. No one in the SCV can stand aside, he wrote, because in this ongoing fight to preserve our Confederate heritage, this is, as they used to say here in Missouri during the late unpleasantries, war to the knife and knife to the hilt. Oh, we used to have a small farm out here, and I'm still living on part of the property. We used to have out in the barnyard bantam hens and bantam roosters. And if you want to see something funny, you watch those bantam roosters. They strut and they puff and they jump and they flap their wings and all around the barnyard. But they never really hurt anybody or anything. They never really attack. They might attack a little bit another rooster, but that's about it. These are banty hens. The Southern Confederate Benny Hens. Kirk Lyons cuts a striking figure. On a day in late September, the solidly built 6'3" attorney plus another inch or so, he's wearing his wide-brimmed period hat, sports a red shirt and red tie and dark pants. And last time I saw him, he was a little thick around the waist, but we won't talk about that. Symbols abound. He wears an SCV pin, and in honor of South Carolina, where his law firm is chartered, he sports a tiny palmettos and crescent moons on his tie. Let me stop this a minute. I don't think I want to go on forever with this deal. You're probably asleep already. Oh, Christ, this goes on and on and on forever. Kirk Lyons, a white supremacist. Well, I guess he is. He's not a white separatist, or he's a white integrationist. You take your pick. Well, that's about it for now. I don't have time to read this whole thing and put you to sleep. I'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is Wotan's Day. I can imagine if David Lane was reading this crap that I've been reading to you. he'd be going nuts. He'd be rolling around in his grave, and he'd be trying to claw his way to the surface to put his firm hands around the necks of these guys, claiming to be, I don't know what the hell they claim to be. I'm confused.